Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. It is Friday, and you are listening to the only show that is asserting a constitutional solution to getting the general government or federal government back into the framework of the Constitution once again. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. And I want you to know that the phone lines are open. Today is the open phone conversation question. I'm not going to have that standing question, so if you want to call and talk about the Constitution, Republic Review, Reclaiming the Republic, all of the above. The number to call in is 215-867-8255. And I think I tell you, and I think I need to tell you a little bit more, because I keep on seeing our numbers going up. That means our audience is increasing. And I want everybody to understand that this show is dedicated to supporting state legislators who are willing to commit to protecting their citizens from federal tyranny. In addition, we are also supporting those county grassroots leaders, such as the Central Committee chairs and so forth. And what this means is we're out here trying to support them who are willing to protect all of us from federal tyranny. So I hope that we can continue to grow this show in creating a symbiotic relationship with those who are in the fray of literally trying to take back our Constitution and save our republic. So with that, I need to get hot on this crowdfunding thing, because I'm completely failing on it. I know I need to go out there and create a campaign and all of that. And so I need to focus on that. And I promise I'm going to try to do that. There's just a lot of other things that I keep on getting sidetracked on. But that being said, I need your help. I could truly use a few people to start championing some very specific things that will help what we're doing. And so if you've got time, I'm not going to say don't send money, but as I always say, save your money at this point in time, because we're going to need you to contribute small amounts of money to these candidates that are signing these pledges, who are willing to support Republic Review and auditing the Constitution. And so I'm going to be really engaged next week in lots of phone calls with different candidates and trying to get them to get on board with signing these pledges so that we can help. The problem that I have in a lot of these real red states is that there really is no competition. So there's no pressure for them to, why do I need to sign this? Well, how about, because you're supposed to protect your citizens anyway. You take an oath to support, defend, and obey the Constitution in many of these states. And in addition to that, you are duty-bound just by the position that you're in protecting your citizens from federal tyranny. I'm just really surprised that we've gone on this many hundreds of years with the sidestepping of these important roles and responsibilities. And I wish we could get Madison back just for a little while so he could really get people fired up, especially Thomas Jefferson. Anywho, as I always say, and as I, before each show, I actually scan the news, and there is no sign of the federal government disbanding any of its tyrannical roles. And I'm going to repeat this every day, because I'm trying to drive home the point that they're not going to do it on their own. It is a fantasy to believe that people will disassemble their power that they have assembled over the years just because they shouldn't. They shouldn't be doing it. It's not good. And nobody does that, especially when it comes to government. Government never does that. Government has to be forced to do that. And the beautiful thing is we have a constitution that has given us all of the leverage we need without having to ever go through a revolution ever again. We don't need to fight a revolution The only time that we're going to have to fight a resistance or anything like that is if we lose our Constitution and Republic. And then by that time, it's too late because, as I've said, the technology is not in our favor. It's not like we got muskets again and they've got muskets. They have an unlimited amount of money and funding for all sorts of weaponry, intelligence, and so forth. And it's definitely not an equal battleground anymore. I usually have a question for the day, and so I would much rather let you ask the question and or articulate what your focus is, because I know there's been a lot of stuff in the news, and there's always a constitutional perspective of these things in the news, but for the most part, I'm wide open. I try to do this on Fridays now instead of just trying to maintain the standing question. So that standing question will be revisited on Monday. But today, we're getting very, very close. And as a matter of fact, it is 1 week from today when the full Red Pill Expo is going on full bore. A week from last night would have been a week out from the airing of the Dead Man Talking on Lavoie Finicum. So you want to do the streaming, I would recommend that you go to redpillexpo.org and pick up the streaming. And actually, I found out that if you use Griffin, G-R-I-F-F-I-N, it will kick back the discounts that you could have received earlier if you go and get them now. And so this way you can actually do the screening of the video, you can do the streaming of the content, speakers, interviews, and all sorts of other things so that you can stay abreast and it'd be just like you're here. The only difference is you're not paying all that money for the travel, your time, and you know the expenses of the hotel, all that type of stuff, in just rubbing elbows with people that would have been great to rub elbows with and shake hands and so forth, get signed books or whatever, but at least you'll be able to get the content and get the gist of it. And that, I think this expo will be a real impact on what we're doing in the future, because if I didn't tell you, I've cut 5 short 1.5 minute videos, basically 1.5 minute videos, for Red Pill University. Red Pill University is going to start bringing in my content so that we can start educating patriots via the Red Pill University and start doing sessions so that people can come on board and actually, engage in a classroom dialogue to where I can talk about what we need to do, why we're doing this, how to do this, and those basic things in detail. And that way the people can ask questions, okay, what do we need to do with this and how do we do that? And, you know, discuss some of the nuances between one state and another and the makeup. And I'm currently working on a new set of bullets in how to take back the party and basically move the party back towards a ground up party instead of a national party down, because that has been, I truly believe, that has been one of the biggest problems we've had since the party bosses literally centralized everything and started collectivizing the power into a national bastion, if you want to call that. And so anyway, in the news, I'll just let you know, I was interviewed today on Philadelphia's WFYL on the Constitution Matters, and it was a very good dialogue. I think they definitely want to have me back, but we need to figure out when and how to do that. I also got interviewed on Radio Free Redoubt, which is a redoubt prepper, you know, resistance. And I would highly recommend you checking it out. Radio Free Redoubt is a perspective for the redoubt area, but I honestly believe that there are people that are trapped that can't necessarily free themselves because of employment, because of circumstances, family. Believe me, I know how it is. And you just can't pack up and move to the redoubt area to where you can feel like you can, you know, not necessarily put your guard down, but know who your neighbors are and know that, you know, you're living in an area that with a lot of like-minded people. And those who are not like-minded, they kind of stand out, and you know, well, okay, I better be on my guard with those people over there. But it's, this area is not like your typical suburban, or it's very rural out here. And so you don't necessarily, you know, a kid cannot make a real haul in trick-or-treating. Let me just say that. They would have to really work off a lot of calories just to get a few candy bars, because you're doing some real hoofing. It's not like your typical Southern California, or, you know, big city suburbs where the houses are built on top of each other and so forth. Anyway, I'm not sure if you noticed, and I know this has nothing to do with the Constitution, but I think it has something to do with paradigms, corporations, and so forth, because I think there's a particular company that kind of seems to be on, you know, in a different paradigm with most people with regards to this company in comparison to lots of other companies. And I'll give you some examples of other companies. I think Amazon, Google, or Oracle, IBM, those are your typical large conglomerate globalist companies. And so I guess I'll have to tease you, because I'm at a hard break, on the company that I think has maybe been fooling everybody because of their positions and the way they come across. But I will tell you about this company when we get back from a hard break. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614, or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
And so that company I'm talking about, because I truly believe they've done a really good job in marketing themselves as the rebel company. And so that company I'm talking about is Apple. I truly believe that if you really look at how they've marketed themselves and what they've done, they've made themselves stand out like a rebel company, but I will tell you that they're really not that rebellious. If you remember the first Mac commercial with that guy running into the big theater room and throwing that sledgehammer that goes up and, you know, destroys the screen, you know, like the 1984, and you remember their marketing with their different Russian fashion and so forth of how everything's all the same except for Apple and Mac. They did an excellent job in marketing themselves as a unique company. However, and so actually a little bit more on the marketing with Apple, Apple had the vision of being able to create a loyal customer base when they went in and they started giving away computers to schools in the 80s. And that created a loyalty customer base because that's what kids knew. That's what they were comfortable with. And so when they started, you know, working on an Apple, everything was, you know, WYSIWYG or what you see is what you get. And it was very intuitive and user-friendly. It gave them a real edge. And so IBM and Microsoft actually started going in with contracts with the government. And so they were both competing with each other and trying to create market space. But Apple has been going after, and they actually have been very successful in creating a monopoly. Now, if you go out and buy a PC, you can buy a Dell, you can buy an HP, you can buy an IBM Lenovo, which I would not. I would highly recommend never buying anything that is coming from China, because Lenovo is definitely coming from China. But, and because that's because they have this intelligent firmware in their systems, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, anybody with clearances or what have you, that is on the list of don't buy their stuff, because they've got nefarious firmware and codes to basically spy on you. So why would you want to buy something like that? Anyway, Apple has created almost a perfect little monopoly, because you have to buy their software. It's not like there's any, you can't buy Dell, you can't buy, you know, HP. It has got to be Apple stuff, because Apple doesn't play with anybody else. And so when you buy any Apple hardware, it is Apple hardware. The Dell does not make a variety for both PC, Windows, and Apple. And Apple has a complete control on their market. So they've done a really brilliant job in monopolizing and creating their customer loyalty and all of that. And they've also been moving towards the Apple Pay, those types of things. They've been pushing the trend in creating that new age cashless society. Everything that they're doing is aligning with the globalist initiatives and efforts. Everything. And I'm not sure if you heard, but today, apparently Oprah Winfrey had inked a deal with them so that they would be able to exclusively have access to her content. Now, if you look at who Oprah is, and if you look at Apple's marketing, this is almost like a religious marriage, because Apple has kind of treated themselves as, like, again, that Orwellian religion, or the anti-Orwellian religion, even though they're driving everybody in that direction. And if you look and just Google Oprah and religion, Oprah's religion, you'll find YouTube videos where she's talking about, or actually Google Oprah and salvation and Christ, and you'll probably find some of those YouTube videos where she says Christ is not the only way for salvation. And she actually has her own religion, and it's basically an occult. And if you look at how these two are kind of created their base and created their niche within their markets, It's almost like a two religions coming together in a product content market space. And so I think it's pretty interesting how they've been able to get into this position. But I just want you to know there's been a facade that Apple has been the anti-government company. They are a globalist company just like the rest of them. And they are in the tank for a globalist economy and a globalist government. The only thing that, you know, they've basically told the FBI and enforcement agencies that they're not going to give you the code for the phone. And that's a good thing, supposedly. But who knows, that may change. And it's just a position that they're taking. I just don't believe that they're this real righteous or great company. And in all honesty, when it comes down to things like that, I just have no loyalty towards those globalist companies that are in that type of market space. So anyway, let me move on. And I know this doesn't have anything to do with the Constitution, but it does have something to do with something that has been around for a very long time in trying to undermine our government and forcing people to say, we've got to fix this at a global level. So this is another impetus or driver or motivator in getting people to, you know, come to a global governance so that we can all do everything we can to stop man-made global warming or man-made global change or climate change or what have you. And so I'm not sure if you remember, but in 2016, we had an El Nino. And they're now predicting another El Nino. And usually there's been like there's a cycle to these where it used to be 6 to 8 years, maybe sometimes even a little longer. But El Ninos usually packed a big punch. And it was usually an El Nino year where you get massive flooding in California, those types of things. And so what's interesting is they keep on pointing to these increases in El Ninos having everything to do with global warming. But what I want you to do is I want you to go and look at the venting and the earth core activity, because technically, because I've talked to a lot of geologists, there are 45,000 shield volcanoes, I believe, in the bottom of the Pacific. And they have been, over a decade, been venting more and more. And if you want more proof of that, if you look at all of the volcanic activities that we've been having, and eruptions and so forth, even though we have them as outliers like St. Helens and so forth, there have been a lot of activities lately. And there's just been, over the course of, like I said, over decades, just an increase. And these shield volcanoes, even though they may not seem like a real significant increase in the volcano eruptions, these shield volcanoes have been increasing their venting, which is causing the heating of the ocean. And that's what causes weather change. It has nothing to do, and maybe possibly even a global temperature changes, but it has nothing to do with man-made contributions. There is very little evidence at all that we can make that kind of an impact. As a matter of fact, there have been volcano winters that have literally changed where, I believe it was in the early 1800s, where a Indonesian volcano erupted, and in New England, they did not have a summer. As a matter of fact, a lot of people starved, and I think it was also tied to the potato famine at the same time, because the agricultural growing of crops in the Northern Hemisphere was affected that one summer, so the people couldn't grow, and the winter was a little harsh because of that volcanic winter for the summertime, which caused, you know, a lot of people to starve to death and freeze and so forth. So volcanoes can cause that kind of calamity on the weather, but we've never had that kind of calamity. And if you compare the particulates and all the things that factories and people are throwing into the air, it is nothing to the massive cubic acres of ash and particulates that a volcano will throw up in the air in just one plume. And with Hawaii and all of these other things going on, there is, to me, there's far more credible scientific evidence that the Earth is heating up on its own accord, and it has nothing to do with the man-made factor. As a matter of fact, we're getting better and better, and we're producing far less pollution since the 50s and 60s. So anyway, one other thing in the news I wanted to bring up. Today is the anniversary of the tragic usurpation of by the federal government for creating the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. This is where they went in and grabbed two states' property. I think it was Carolina and Tennessee. And basically, they dedicated it a little later on in 1940. But that happened in 1934 today. And so it's really sad that we've allowed the federal government to come in and create these parks or reservations that I've been talking about, right? They have no authority in doing this. And so bottom line, I'm at a hard break. So we'll be right back. And I do have Pennsylvania ratification debate tidbits for you. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so before I get into the ratification debates, there was a couple of other things that I thought was really important, because I've talked about this before, and apparently the Trump administration is still going down this path of using tariffs. Now, I know Madison and Jefferson, by Jefferson's persuasion, Madison imposed tariffs as well. And I know that they have a purpose. However, there are so many countries that have tariffs and are going after, you know, I mean, literally adding all sorts of additional taxes on American goods, that I truly believe that we just need to take the high road. And instead of doing responsive tariffs on specific products or markets, go, you know, look, if you're not going to be playing fair and you want to target and be protectionists, then we're going to just raise our imposts across the board with your products. America has always been the world's consumer of goods. If that's one of the reasons why we have such a high GDP. When I was in the Marine Corps, we were basically the big PX for the world, for everybody to come and buy their wares at a cheap price, because a lot of people around the world can't afford the types of products that they build and make. That's why you do not see Ferraris all over the place in Italy. There may be a few, but Ferrari makes those cars for the elite of the world, because Italy does not have the elite of the world. And so if you look at just taking the high road, and that way we can literally inject a fair impost that goes across the board against all of the products that are coming in instead of targeting, then the countries will have, I believe, the motivation to say, you know what, we can't afford to try to compete this way. We need to become better. And they need to start getting out of the business of underwriting, subsidizing, and their own products, and using taxes against our products to protect their products. Let the products compete on their own merit instead of adding these additional and outrageous costs and taxes. I mean, when you look at it, just taking the high road and imposing imposts across the board, go ahead and put imposts on our food. Well, let's just see exactly what happens when your people can't afford to eat anymore. And you'll probably find an Arab Spring occur, because when the people can't afford to eat, they start to revolt, because they don't like having to make a choice between, you know, who in their family eats or what is it that they do without just so that they can eat. That becomes a very immoral proposition. So let me repeat something that I haven't said for a long time. If we're going to go into the political fray, we're going to go in and start fighting battles. If we're not using the Constitution to fight our battles, then we risk almost certainty in losing these battles. This is why our only defense and our only weapon that will destroy our enemy and protect us is our Constitution. And so with that, let me dive into these ratification debates. And I will tell you that the Pennsylvania ratification debates is a lot different in tone than you will find in these other ratification debates. Why? Because you'll find that Mr. Wilson, James Wilson, is basically the spokesman for the Federalists. And so he stands up and addresses almost all these issues. And so let me just go ahead and get started, because he has, and it's not that they're really unique, but the whole point in sharing these things and these different ratification debates is to show you how harmonious, even though they were singing in a different voice or using different words, they were all singing the same tune. And so this is kind of interesting, though, because this was the very first ratification debate to convene. And like I said, it was very early. It was November. So Federalist Papers hadn't even really started churning out. I don't think Madison was just getting on board or just got down there right around the time when they finally ratified the Constitution. But let me go on. And Mr. Wilson says, quote, "A very important difficulty arose from comparing the extent of the country to be governed with the kind of government which it would be proper to establish in it. It has been an opinion countenanced by high authority that the natural property of small states is to be governed as a republic, of middling ones to be a subject of a monarchy, and of large empires to be swayed by a despotic prince, and that the consequences is that in order to preserve the principles of the established government, the state must be supported in the extent it has acquired, and that the spirit of the state will alter in proportion as it extends or contracts its limits." Now, he starts quoting Montesquieu, and they actually cite specifically what pages and so forth in Montesquieu that they're citing here. And he goes on, he says, "This opinion seems to be supported rather than contradicted by the history of governments in the old world. Here, then, the difficulty appeared in full view. On one hand, the United States contained an immense extent of territory, and according to the foregoing opinion, a despotic government is best adapted to that extent. On the other hand, it is well known that, however, the citizens of the United States might, with pleasure, submit to the legitimate restraints of a Republican Constitution, they would reject the indignation and fetters of despotism. What then was to be done? The idea of a Confederate Republic presented itself. This kind of Constitution has been thought to have, quote, and this is Montesquieu's words, all the internal advantages of a Republican together with the external forces of a monarchical government, close quote. So they're talking in the grand scheme here of how to create this government. And this is why I talk about this in my book, that what they did was they created a multi-tiered and a multi-laned levels of sovereignty and separations of control and power. And so, and I'm going to get into this clearly as we move on, but the people are the sovereigns of all things. And so we have the ultimate sovereignty. In other words, we can cast off our government because that is inalienable. And that is based in our founding document, the Declaration of Independence. And so we can clearly cast off any government that we want, but it would require a revolution. And I've said before that we do not have to fight a revolution anymore because of the type of constitution that we have. Because the Constitution has very specific delegated powers to it. So the states did not surrender all of its powers, and the people did not surrender all of its sovereignty to the states. So we have this in a horizontal approach, we have these levels of separation of sovereignty. Yes, we give up a few things to the state to be able to do its functions in governing. The state, in turn, gave up a few things but retained all other things in giving the United States or the national government or the federal government the ability to govern for the purposes and extent that they needed to provide national security, to create foreign exchange, to create domestic harmony, and those types of things. But if you look at the enumerated powers, they do not have the power to dictate energy or energy regulations. They don't have the power to dictate national parks or any kinds of reservations. They don't have the power to dictate education, healthcare, housing. All of these things were left to the states. Nowhere will you find that the states have relegated or allowed the federal government through delegation in an amendment to have these powers. So all of these powers have been usurped by the federal government. Now, we, the people of each state, and as Madison put in his comments, who are the parties to it? We the people? No, it's we the people of the several 13 sovereigns, because he clearly identified, and this is what Wilson also identifies, but this is just like an introduction paragraph where he talks about this. So the next paragraph is where he goes in, and I'm looking, I don't have enough time to hit this one. But this is where he talks a little bit about how Britain is a sovereign and how it applies its sovereignty. So what he's doing is he's really laying out for the ratification debates, and I should say for Philadelphia, not Philadelphia, for Pennsylvania, he's really laying out the, you know, the logic that they were using and why they created this document the way they did. And so, like I said, at the very beginning, Pennsylvania was another, and all of these ratification debates were literally who's who of the political fray of the time. I mean, Hamilton, Madison, Monroe, all of these guys were, Benjamin Franklin, they were all there. Benjamin Rush, it was a who's who of all the players of politics that came to these things. And so, as you can tell, I'm at a hard break, so let me come right back and we'll dive into a few more of these Pennsylvania ratification debates. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so, as we were just going into break, Mr. Wilson's next little example for the delegates in the Pennsylvania ratification debate basically took this turn in focusing on Britain. And he says, there necessarily exists in government a power from which there is no appeal, and which, for that reason, may be termed supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable. Where does this power reside? To this question, writers on different governments will give different answers. Sir William Blackstone will tell you that in Britannia, the power is lodged in the British Parliament, that the Parliament may alter the form of government, and that its power is absolute, without control. The idea of a constitution limiting and superintending the operations of legislative authority seems not to have been accurately understood in Britain. There are at least no traces of practice comfortable to such a principle. The British Constitution is just what the British Parliament pleases. When the Parliament transferred legislative authority to Henry VIII, the act transferring could not, in the strict acceptance of the term, be called unconstitutional. To control the power and conduct of the legislature by an overruling constitution was an improvement in the science and practice of government reserved to the American states.
perhaps some politicians who has not considered with sufficient accuracy our political systems would answer that in our governments, the supreme power was vested in the constitutions. This opinion approaches a step nearer to the truth, but does not reach it. The truth is that in our governments, the supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable power remains in the people. As our constitutions are superior to our legislatures, so the people are superior to our constitutions. Indeed, the superiority in this last instance is much greater for the people possess over our constitutions control in act as well as right. And so if you understand what he was just saying, then you have to put it back into context of precisely what Madison was saying when Madison was addressing who the parties of the Constitution was in the Virginia ratification debates. He says, we the people? Yes, but no, we the people of the 13 sovereigns. So in other words, it's the people of the individual and disparate states, not we the people as a collective democracy. There is a separation between each state, and there is a disparate, a separation as well, or disparate interest as well in each of these states, because the states that happen to live on the seaboard have their own interest of maritime shipping and those types of things, where the states that are in the plains or in the mountains and so forth have different interests as well. And the people living there have a different focus. And so that is why the Sherman Compromise was so huge in understanding that there were literally two separate interests or constituents in government itself, because he's talking about the people, but the people had two focuses. And this is where we really messed up, because we, as the citizens of our prospective states, started focusing at the national level and made the national level become everything to us, when we should have been maintaining our focus on the state and then just for the principles of those things delegated to the federal government, such as war, such as foreign commerce, and those types of things. That's when we turn to the states, or we turn to our national representatives in Congress and say, hey, get us out of this war, or hey, you know, you're taxing us too much, or, you know, why are we competing with this foreign commerce that is being, you know, dumped on us because the government's subsidizing? Those types of things is what is appropriate for us to focus on Washington, D.C. and our representation. But it's not appropriate when we start talking about, you know, how much water does our toilet supposed to flush, or, you know, can these factories, you know, do, you know, this type of thing safely, or is it harmful for the environment? If you understand what I'm saying, it's the same thing with education in Common Core. Why are we dealing with Common Core? Because we keep on allowing the federal government to get in our knickers about these things. Every time we have a problem, we face the national government and say, fix this, do this, help us. When we shouldn't be doing that. The intent should always be focused on where the I'll call it the light of the candle of responsibility shines. If the state government has the candle that shines the light on all of these things, from healthcare, education, housing, farming, industry, work, employment, all those types of things, then that's where we need to focus, and that's where we need to go. When it comes to the national things, there's very few things we need to go to D.C., but D.C. loves it when we go there, because what ends up happening is we keep on surrendering all sorts of powers to D.C. when it's all unconstitutional, regardless of whether we're willingly surrendering these things or not. As Madison said, March 3rd, 1817, he clearly stated that even if the states allow you to do this outside of the process within that instrument, within the Constitution, and what he was talking about is if we don't amend the Constitution, surrendering that to the federal government, it still is unconstitutional, and at any point the states can pull back on those and say, you can't do this anymore. We're tired of the tyranny, and we're tired of how you're using this against us. And that's what they've been doing. Wilson also says that in this Constitution, all authority is derived from the people. So again, I go back to what Madison had said, and it's true, it's derived from the people of the 13 sovereign states. And I think that if you read these things, that's why in reading all of these, you'll start, you know, differentiating the vernacular or the little twist that they put in emphasizing something, but maybe something gets lost. And so that's why it's really important to understand the ratification debates and the focus of the disparate states. Because again, remember, Massachusetts was really concerned and formed on religious freedom, and that's why their paradigm on the Constitution was much more of a grander, righteous type of focus, where Virginia and the Carolinas, they were more commercial. And actually, I was pretty surprised with North Carolina's central focus on legalities, jurisdiction, and those things. And that's probably because the politicians in the Carolinas, North Carolina specifically, as I've gone through those debates are focused because I believe just most of those people are lawyers, where most of the people at the debates in Massachusetts were reverends. And if you look at Virginia, there were lots of lawyers, but there were also business-focused, business-minded people and so forth. So Virginia was a really broad perspective. And just so you know, Virginia was the most populated state, and it was the largest state in the Union. So it was number one in landmass and number one in population. So it was the big dog. And remember, I told you that when New York ratified the Constitution, I think that they just surrendered, because by that time there were 10 states and the biggest dog had already joined the Union. So if they didn't join the Union, then they would have been a real outlier. And I think they would have thought that they would have started to languish. And they're probably right. I don't really have a lot of time to go into some of these other ones. But he talks about this, some really interesting things. This next line starts off as, "The secret is now disclosed and is discovered." And so what does he mean by that? Because he talks about the state sovereignties and power and supremacy. This really gets into the Supremacy Clause. So on Monday, for those on the terrestrial radio, we will get into the Supremacy Clause comments that Wilson has, and we'll get into some more. I want to get through these so that we can start focusing on the elections and the upcoming primaries for the summer. That way, I'm hoping that we can start getting engaged and getting people to sign pledges and getting committed so that we have more people in 2019 talking about auditing the Constitution and protecting us from federal tyranny and stopping it, hopefully by 2020. I'm out of time, and so at least for the terrestrial radio waves, and we will, after the music's done, I will talk a little bit more about what's coming up next week. Thank you so much. And I know I've been groveling for people to help, and I would just put it out there that if you are free, you can easily help with some of these conventions of state constitutions, splitting the states up, those types of things. I'd love to get this out there to you. But what I'm hoping to do next week is talk to a couple of more leaders out in the communities and hopefully maybe have a guest or two on so that we can, you know, kind of expose you to some of the things that are going on throughout the Republic in working together in trying to save our Constitution and save our liberties. And so thank you so much for tuning in and helping the show grow. I hope you have a blessed weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Thank you again.